Quiet Man by Amanda Watkins.
My sister Dorothy and I had settled into retirement and were getting used to living under the same roof again. Dorothy had retired from nursing and, I hoped, marriage after three divorces, and I had retired from teaching. When my husband died, I joined Dorothy in our family home to help care for our parents. After they died, we didn't want to move, so we converted the house into two apartments. We had the ground floor flat, and we rented the first floor to Henry Mitchell, a man we reckoned was in his late 30s or early 40s. He said that he worked from home, needed peace and quiet to concentrate, and would work in the flat from Monday to Thursday, and would be away each weekend. And that's the way it was for 2 years. He would drive off at 8 o'clock each Thursday evening and return on Monday morning at 7:30 on the dot. You could set your watch by him. Until one Thursday evening a few weeks ago. We were just about to watch the 10 o'clock news. Dorothy got up to close the curtains and said, "Oh, look, Hetty, that's odd. Mr. Mitchell's car is still on the drive." "Maybe he's changed his mind about this weekend," I ventured. "Well, that would be a first," she said. We'd heard his mobile phone ringing a few times during the evening. "Why don't we try calling him?" she said. We heard it ring, but there was no reply. "I'm going up to see if he's all right," she said. And off she went with our spare set of keys. A few minutes later, she flew back in and said, "He's had an accident. I've called 999 and an ambulance is on its way." I went up with the paramedics when they arrived. He was lying across the bed, clutching a towel. There was blood on his head, and his right knee looked swollen and twisted. Dorothy reckoned that he had slipped in the shower, hit his head, and damaged his knee on the way down. He'd somehow managed to get to the bed before passing out. The paramedics asked if we knew who the hospital should contact, but we had no idea. After 2 years, we knew very little about Mr. Mitchell. He was always very pleasant and polite, but remained a mystery. The obvious place to look for contacts would be his mobile, but we couldn't find it. And it really was imperative to get him to the hospital quickly. After they'd gone, Dorothy went downstairs and phoned his mobile. I was upstairs listening. The ringing was coming from behind the bed. He must have been trying to answer it, poor bloke. His list of contacts was as mysterious as the man himself, just a string of initials. Surely the first one on the list, a J, would be his wife. He was wearing a wedding ring, so presumably he was married. I tried it. It rang a couple of times, then went to answer phone. "Hello, you have reached Julia's phone. I'm sorry I can't take your call. Please leave your name and number and I'll get back to you." So I left a message. The next initial on the list was a J as well. So although it was a bit late, I tried it. After a couple of rings, a man's voice answered. "Henry, you old rascal. I've been trying to get you all evening. What are you up to?" I told him who I was and explained what had happened, and said that the hospital needed to know who they should be in contact with. I mentioned that I'd left a message on Julia's phone and had assumed that she was his wife. "Oh, yes, she is. She's probably turned her phone off for the night," he said. "Well, look, leave it with me. Oh, my name's Jason Lawford, by the way. Henry and I go way back. I'll speak to the hospital and come back to you." And he was gone. He phoned back about 20 minutes later. He'd spoken to the hospital. They told him that Henry had concussion and a dislocated knee. He'd be in there for a few more days and wanted some items from his flat taken in. Jason said he'd call on us the following morning to collect Henry's things and take them in for him. So early next morning, Dorothy and I went up to his flat and put some essentials in a bag. His cupboards and drawers were amazing, incredibly well organised. All his socks were in a row in a drawer, shirts and jumpers neatly folded on shelves, and trousers and jackets hanging, colour-coded, on the rail. Well, I say colour-coded. They were mostly beige or brown. They made John Major's wardrobe look positively flamboyant. When Jason arrived, our curiosity got the better of us, and we had to ask about Henry. "Oh, he's a decent bloke," said Jason. "He and I were at school together. His main problem is he can't bear attention of any sort. It brings on panic attacks. He had wanted to be a solicitor but couldn't stand the pressure of speaking to clients. So he concentrated on languages instead, and now he translates legal documents from German and French." "Oh, well, that accounted for a lot." "Oh, by the way," he said, "I had a quick word with Julia this morning. She got your message and she's going to visit him shortly. Thanks for your help. I'll let you know how he's progressing." And off he went. After he had gone, we felt we knew our tenant a bit better. Poor chap. It must be so crippling to have panic attacks. Shortly after lunch, we heard the upstairs flat doorbell ring. There was a smartly dressed woman standing on the doorstep. "Is this where Henry Mitchell lives?" she said. "He has the flat above this one," I said. "He isn't there at the moment. Are you Julia?" "Yes," she said. "Thank you for your message. I've just seen him in the hospital and I'd like to collect a few things from his flat." "Oh, of course," I said, "but Jason took a bag of items he wanted in yesterday." "I know," she said, "but there are one or two things he wants, and to be honest, I'd love to have a look at the flat. I've never been here." I took her upstairs and she gathered a few items he had specified. I liked Julia. She seemed warm and friendly. "Have you and Henry been married long?" I asked. 2.5 years, she said. "The trouble was we both work from home. I'm an interior designer and often have clients around for meetings, and Henry found it too distracting. So he thought it best if he found somewhere else to work. And this is so much nicer than a bland, soulless place in town." Later that day, Jason phoned to ask if Julia had been in touch, and I told him about her visit. I hope you don't mind me asking," I said, "but if Henry is so cripplingly shy, how did he meet Julia?" "You're right," he said. "He can't do small talk, and just the thought of approaching women was enough to make him panic. So he joined an online dating agency. That way, all the introductory chat is out of the way before they meet. He was lucky to meet someone as nice and understanding as Julia." When Henry's knee had been sorted and the concussion was easing, Dorothy and I went to the hospital to visit him. He looked tired, but otherwise all right. "I can't thank you enough for your help," he said. "I dread to think what would have happened if you hadn't come upstairs when you did." He was discharged after a week in hospital and planned to convalesce for another week or so at home with Julia and then go back to his previous routine. We were relieved he was all right and felt we knew our tenant a little bit better now. The day before we were expecting Henry to return to the flat, his doorbell rang. I answered it to a casually dressed middle-aged man who introduced himself as Detective Sergeant Dolkin from the local police station. He asked if a Henry Mitchell lived here. I explained that Mr. Mitchell rented the upstairs flat but was currently in the general hospital. He didn't seem that surprised by the news and asked if he could gain access to search the flat. When I hesitated, he produced his police ID card and said that I would be welcome to accompany him to see that no damage was done. It all seemed very mysterious and dramatic, so I asked him what it was all about. He said, "Has he ever mentioned his wife?" "Well, he never mentioned her to my sister and I, but since he's been in hospital, we have met her," I said. "He's never really spoken about his home life," I added. "He keeps himself to himself." "Hmm," he said. "So he never mentioned either of his wives?" "Either," I said. "Oh, so you're after him for bigamy?" D.S. Dolkin smiled. "Oh, no. He wasn't a bigamist when he married for the second time. But by then, his first wife was dead. The Watford police have just dug her body up in the back garden of his old house."
The Quiet Man was written and read by Amanda Watkins. The music, Dreams, is from bensound.com.